Right. I will first give a general introduction of all the different neo-Nazi to more right-wing populist parties that operate in the different European countries at the moment. And then about details about them, if you want to ask about a special country, you can do that afterwards. If I have time, I will also do a case study of Sweden and the Sweden Democrats that now have, unfortunately, such a big success, at least at the moment, in the Swedish electorate. Then we take the questions and answers. Also, as you saw, if you haven't got this book, take it here. It's a part of the fee you paid for being here, so to say. And also, you can find this book in full at the internet at europedeservesbetter.com. We are actually also, we will publish very soon a book in English about the French Front National that also, unfortunately, have big success at the moment. We'll discuss that also, hopefully. And we will later on also publish a book, a Frenchman that he's got a Greek mother or something. He spent 4 months undercover in the Golden Dawn, the neo-Nazi party in Greece. It was meant he was going to spend 6 months there, but he was living with them, eating with them, sleeping with them, as they do in their extremist collective, so to say. But after 4 months, a friend in the organization told him that the leadership are very suspicious about you. You better get out of here, if not, yeah. So we will publish his book in English also, and that will also be published here at this website. Just to say I'm very glad to be here. Chicago is always, it's very nice to be in Chicago. I've been here 1998, 2002, and of course you have your problems with gentrification, but still it is a very nice city. For me, Chicago is also the city of Al Bundy in Married with Children, but maybe that's not so serious thing. But anyway, it was they had success in the 1990s as a sitcom. Also this to follow the extremist parties. Searchlight is a magazine in the United Kingdom that was founded in 1982, and they have then followed the British National Front, British National Party, and so on. And also as headline for this discussion about Stieg Larsson. Stieg Larsson has written these three detective stories. He founded in 1995 an anti-Nazi foundation to fight extremism in Sweden. And that was what he was working with as a journalist. And then he decided that he needed also to get some pension money. And that was when these books were written. But behind every successful man, there is a successful woman, of course. So it has been debated now afterwards that his girlfriend actually did the big bit of structuring the books and so on. And unfortunately, when Stieg Larsson died in 2004 of heart failure, very suddenly, they were not married because he didn't want to be in public registers so he could be found by extremists. So he hadn't married his girlfriend, so she didn't get the inheritance. It went to his father and brother. He had an old testimony that he was giving all he owned to a Trotskyist party in Sweden that he belonged to in the 1970s. But it was not no witnesses had signed this testimony, so it was not valid. This Trotskyist party in 2008 had 129 members, so it would have been a big thing for them to get all this money from Stieg Larsson books and films and whatever. But they didn't take the legal fight about it. They said that his partner should have got the money from his books. But anyway, Stieg Larsson, he was also an early source for what happened in Grenada. Well, Ronald Reagan invaded it in 1983, but Stieg Larsson followed the Maurice Bishop New Jewel movement in Barbados very early. So he was also doing a lot of things all over the world, actually, and taking back information back home to Sweden. Well, anyway, fascism, it doesn't have one single definition, but several. So I will use fascism or neo-fascism sometimes as a term, but it can always discuss the exactly context of that term. In Europe, the different extremist parties have tried to work together for in different corporations. They had something like what's called Euronat for a while, that was very extreme right-wing. In the European Parliament, sometimes they have been able to form a group. In 2007, they had a group called Identity, Tradition and Sovereignty. And they just were able to find 20 members to form a group in the European Parliament. Today, you need 25, but at that time, 20. But that group failed already after 11 months because Alessandra Mussolini, the granddaughter of Benito Mussolini, she called the Romanians coming to Italy as thieving gypsies. And to say that to an ethnic Romanian nationalist, call him or her a gypsy, that is the worst insult you can ever give them. So the Romanian Nationalist Party, they left this ITS group and it fell apart. So they after the European Parliament election in May 2014, they were not able to form a group because, it's a span from neo-Nazis to more right-wing populists, and they also get it that they have problems to sometimes explain back home why they have formed a group with the Hungarian neo-Nazi Jobbik party, for example, or not. So, but I will describe this political parties in the span, what it is about. If we see this as a scale with far-right neo-Nazis here and then more right-wing populist parties here, Golden Dawn from Greece, they are the most neo-Nazi party with a... It consists of more or less an army, a criminal organization they have been also defined as in Greece. Ex-military, ex-paratroopers, for example. This French guy I told you about, his first meeting at the headquarters of Golden Dawn, that was they were loading machine guns in front of him and checking his loyalty and his if he was as fixated to weapons as they were and so on. Jobbik from Hungary is also next in line here. They are also into parades and uniforms, violence, and things like that. I can tell more about them if you're interested later on. Then we have also like NPD from Germany. They have one member of the European Parliament right now, and they are, of course, they see themselves as they have inherited the nationalist socialist workers' party of Germany of the Hitler time. And then there are like Ataka from Bulgaria, and BNP, British National Party, they also had members of the European Parliament. They got 2 seats in the election of 2009, but then they got more financial resources because they were given money from the European Parliament for secretariat, employing people and so on, and then they got, they got in a lot of quarrels about how to distribute this funds within the party organization and so on. So they lost out now in the elections in Britain after that. But they were quite successful, especially in very poor traditional labor areas in Britain. We have then FPÖ from Germany, Austria. FPÖ, Die Freiheitlichen from Austria. They have a connection also to the German Nazi Party. Like the former leader, Haider, his parents were, of course, very much active in the Nazi party during the time when Austria were annected by Germany. And, SS veteran meetings, for example, FPÖ has always been present there and so. Also, from Belgium, in the Flemish part, Vlaams Belang, another party that... also have direct connections, like there were about 10,000 Flemish Belgians that served in the German SS in Russia in Soviet Union during World War II. And they are inherited, you can say, it's their grandchildren that now are active in Vlaams Belang, even if it has lost out now quite recently in Belgian politics. Then we have Sweden Democrats. from my country, unfortunately. They belonged from the beginning out here when they started by neo-Nazis in 1988. But they have gone in this direction with a younger generation of politicians that came in from the young moderates, the young conservatives. I will tell a little bit, if time permit, more about them. They were earlier, like in 1999, they were aligned with the Front National in France. But nowadays, they don't dare to talk in front of Swedish voters about their connection to Front National, even if Front National has changed as well, which I will talk about soon. But Sweden Democrats have moved from being neo-Nazi to a more right-wing populist social conservative party changed their profile. Then Front National in France, during the leadership of Jean-Marie Le Pen, he was a former paratrooper, torturer of people in Algeria during the war between, the independence war in Algeria. He was a distributor of Nazi literature in the 1950s. He also have a connection to the old Pétain government that was a puppet government to Hitler during the beginning of World War II, for example, and so on. But now his daughter, Marine Le Pen, has taken over. She has kept the name and the logo, but she has a totally other appearance in French media. She speaks about globalization and how French workers are driven out of their industrial works. She speaks about French lorry drivers that lose their jobs because there are cheap Polish lorry drivers that comes to France and drive the lorries instead. So she says, I take the part of the workers. And already, since more than 20 years, especially in the southern part of France, Front National have been the biggest party among workers. And so they have been working in a long term to build up a strong organization. Well, also because in France, the Socialist Party and the UMP, as the Conservative Party now are called, they both the right-wing party and the Socialist Party has been the party of elitists. It has been lawyers, it has been entrepreneurs, it has been those that have gone through the ENA, their national bureaucratic school, to form the elite of the French society. Those are the ones that have been running the two big parties in French politics. And they have been, of course, they have distanced themselves from, they don't know what working class is, for example. Then there are other parties, like in this book I write about PVV, Partij voor Vrijheid, of Kim Wilders in Netherlands. He started off in the right-wing liberal party in Netherlands, but he jumped off and formed his own party, PVV. So he's a market liberal, but he also has tried to form another profile in politics. His party, it's really his party. He is the only member of that party. They have members of regional parties, they have members of parliament, but they are just taking orders from the leader, Geert Wilders. He is the only man in the party. So they cannot take in money by membership of fees, of course, but they get donations, they get money through that they now have several MPs and members of the European Parliament and so on, so they get state subsidies. But he supported a right-wing government in Netherlands than the previous legislature. But in the end, when they were going to do some reductions in the state budget, he felt that he was going to lose his base among working-class voters if he said yes to some cutbacks in the public sector. So then he jumped off the support of the right-wing government, and it was new elections, and then it was formed a social democratic right-wing government instead. Then we have also here the Italian Lega Nord. And that is a party that have moved in to the extremist gang of parties, because It was started by Umberto Bossi in northern Italy. Of course, it was separatist, ethnocentric. The northern Italians doesn't like southern Italians because they think they pay too much for them and so on. But Umberto Bossi, he was a member of the Italian Communist Party at the time. And his party has always also been his private company, really. When he resigned due to illness, and a couple of years later it was revealed how he has used party funds for both employing family, but that's quite standard sometimes in right-wing parties in Italy. But he had also, of course, taken in money to buy houses for himself and his party and so on. But they started off more like a regionalist party, working with other regionalist parties in Europe. Then they went into the liberal group, but were excluded there, and then they have further moved in on the right-wing populist area, where they also have had election campaigns against Somali immigrants and so on. In connection to them, about Italy, I mentioned Alessandra Mussolini. She has got her own party, the granddaughter of Benito Mussolini. But she is in alliance with Berlusconi in Partito della Libertà, Freedom of People Party or something they are called now. So Berlusconi and his party, they have then touches into the extremist anti-human rights parties, you can say. The Danish People's Party, they are something like here. They started off like a sort of 1970s anti-tax party. Their leader, Mogens Glistrup, for example, of course he wanted to reduce the social sector in Denmark, but he also said we shouldn't have a military defense. He said we should have a telephone answering machine saying in Russian, "We give up." That should be our defense. Everything he wanted to cut back. And from his party, the Progress Party, it developed into the Danish People's Party instead. And this party is it's anti-Muslim, anti-immigration and so. But they were let into the European Conservative Group in the European Parliament now after the May 2014 election. So they actually, the European Conservatives, are going into the extremist scale of politics nowadays. Then we also have, somewhere, it's hard to say exactly, but Congress of the Polish Right. It's a new party, but in Poland, since 1990, there has always been very arch-Catholic parties at the right wing of the scale with some anti-Semitic influence. But parties in Poland, they come and go. It's always splits and divisions and whatever. But for the moment, then, it's the Congress of the Polish Right that dominates at the right-wing scale. And they are monarchist, anti-democracy, elitist, anti-Semitic, anti-women's rights, anti-gay rights, of course, libertarian in economic views. They are EU skeptic, and they are pro-capital punishment and everything like that. And their leader, Korwin Mikke, he's sort of the clown of the European Parliament that was elected in 2014 then. He likes to speak in English with a Polish accent, where he spits every time he used the word gay, for example, and so on. So he doesn't know much about the world around him, I must say, but yeah. Then there are other, like we have the Spanish Falangistas, but they are now more divided in small parties, so it's not the same thing as it once was. We have also, like, those that are outside this, I would say, because you must preserve and use the word fascist for those that really deserves it. And, for example, UK Independence Party, do they deserve to be called fascist? I don't think so. They are ethnocentric, they are nostalgic about the British Empire, they have very little knowledge about the political life in the rest of Europe except outside United Kingdom and so on. And they want to stop immigration to UK from Romania and Bulgaria, for example, of labor market reasons, they say. So They are ignorant, but I won't say that they are fascist. There is, like in Germany now, Alternative für Deutschland, Alternative for Germany, a new party that is anti-Euro, for example. And they have had, of course, as a new party, you get all crackpots coming in as well. And also, right-wing radical groups have joined them, but it's more seen as a middle-class, upper-class party of those that are dissatisfied with the political development in Germany with the euro, and that Germany has to put in a lot of money into the European Central Bank in order to try to give loans to Greece and Spain and countries that are in financial troubles right now. The worst of them, as I said, that is Jobbik and Golden Dawn, because these parties, they are openly anti-Semitic, anti-African, anti-Muslim, use uniforms, forms like an army, believes in violence. But all of these parties have the core intolerance, but in a different scale. And it has been also, when we have checked on studies for example, the European Parliament elections and national parliament elections, in areas with low turnout, there it's also, as I presume here in the United States, it's areas with, in general, the voters there have a low education, there is high unemployment, social problems. And in Western Europe, for example, there are many immigrants in those areas with low turnout. And in the East, where they don't have immigrants, but they have a strong presence of Roma minority in those areas with low turnouts. In Western Europe, traditionally, these areas with low turnout has been strongholds for Labour, Social Democrats, the left. In Eastern Europe, there is little or no connection between low turnout and a left stronghold. It doesn't matter there. But in these areas with low turnout, these parties do well. In Hungary, in France, in Denmark, in Sweden, and in Romania, for example, low turnout areas are strongholds for the far right. Like in Debrecen in Hungary, it's a city where more or less old-fashioned industry from the communist era has been closed down. Cement industry, old-fashioned steelworks, old mines, and so on. So it's very high unemployment. And in those Roma areas, strangely enough, Jobbik is very strong. But that depends on Romas do not vote to a large extent. Instead, these ethnic Hungarians in this area that have Romas as neighbors feel squeezed, threatened, and they go and vote for Jobbik. In most of the European countries, there is a potential from 15 to 25% votes for a far-right party, unfortunately. That is because people want to kick the establishment. They are anti-immigration, they are anti-Muslim, they are feared about something that they don't know much about, and they are have this anti-feelings because, well, they are intolerant, egoistic, ethnocentric in their perspective. There is also, of course, a segment of racist as well, but I don't think it's that big. The neo-Nazis has not been successful. It's the right-wing populists that are the successful ones in the European Parliament elections. And also, unfortunately, as I said, working-class voters also vote far-right. Well, why? Well, it can always be discussed, but some of the far-right parties, for example, they speak about the Strasser brothers, that was a faction within the Nazi party in Germany in the 1920s, 1930s, even Goebbels belonged to them for a while, that wanted to an anti-capitalist social revolution. And they also wanted a cooperation with communists against German aristocracy. But these Strasser brothers, Greger, he was killed in 1934 in the Night of the Long Knives, and Otto, he He was expelled already in 1930s, and he lived in Switzerland as a refugee. Benito Mussolini has sometimes, by the right wing, been called a left winger because he belonged to the Socialist Party in Italy once upon a time. But he was a minority there because he wanted that Italy should go into World War I. And that was a minority position within the Socialists. But he came from the left. But he was very clear in his program, and that was he just wanted the power and to keep it. Because the Italian fascists, yes, they did some social legislation in Italy, but Mussolini, he was a war criminal, like in Ethiopia in 1936, but already before that, in the beginning of the 1920s, he killed a lot of trade unionists, left-wingers, whoever that stood in his way to get to power. And his first government in 1923, it was a broad non-socialist government. Then he got rid of some of the parties later on. But he was in the Italian fascists, they were not anti-Semitic until 1938, after 15 years in power. And that was then influence from Hitler. But still. So Italian fascism is one thing. German Nazis is another thing. But in history, in Europe. Just to show a little bit about the Sweden Democrats then, and because as a case study in Europe, how many minutes have I? Okay. Then we just do a case study of Sweden before I end this. In the Swedish election in September 2014, the Sweden Democrats got 12.8%, 800,000 votes out of an electorate of 7 million. And it was a political dream for politicians because they were a catch-all party. They got voters coming to them both from right and left. Like, they have the research from the election result is not totally finished yet, but a large group was working class and living in suburbs and in poorer areas of big cities, living in industrial towns and villages where industrial works have disappeared these last 10, 20 years. And they are anti-immigration because, lack of employment. They say, why take in more immigrants when we cannot find them work for our own? That is the common argument there. Even immigrants that came to Sweden in the 1960s, from Yugoslavia mainly, vote for Sweden Democrats. We also have Iranian refugees now settled in Sweden since a long time that are active and vote for the Sweden Democrats because, or Christian groups that come from Syria because they don't like Muslims. And they have fled from Iran or Syria because of Muslims. So they vote for Sweden Democrats. We also have rural population that feels marginalized when Stockholm and the big cities are winning. New jobs are created there, no new jobs for the countryside. It's just closing up everything, shops, pharmacies, whatever. So they also feel neglected, of course. And then we have upper middle class or something. And they vote for the moderates, the conservative party in general. But they also feel that they also want to give a protest to political establishment against immigration. They, as right-wing voters, they feel secure to vote with the Sweden Democrats because the Sweden Democrats also call themselves conservative. And they like that the Sweden Democrats at least are anti-labor movement, anti-social democrats. Also, the leadership in the Sweden Democrats, the second generation after those that neo-Nazis that founded the party, they, as I mentioned before, they come from the young conservatives but went into the Sweden Democrats. And then there is a small group, maybe 2% of the Swedish voters that are openly racist, that just doesn't have a problem to vote with a party that really thinks that, Afro-Swedes are lower intelligent or whatever. And also, I don't know if you have heard of Zlatan Ibrahimovic. you're not soccer fans here. Well, anyway, he's a famous football player in Europe. He was born in Sweden in 1981. He has got a Bosnian father and a Croatian mother. He saved the local team in Malmö from embarrassment by getting them back to up to the first division of football, soccer in Malmö. And he's been a member of the Swedish national team for, since 1994 or something like that. But still, the Sweden Democrats don't consider him as a real Swede. The acting party leader at the moment has said that Zlatan Ibrahimovic, he's not a real Swede because he hasn't got the right body language, he hasn't got the right accent of when he speaks and so on. But he is getting more Swedish now when he's married to a Swedish blonde woman, of course. So he can be a member of the Swedish culture in the future, they say. But so they don't see the Swedish culture as according to ethnic background, but they see the Swedish culture as a hegemony that you have to be deserve to be a member of, and you can only be a Swede if you are defined as a Swede by other Swedes. And it is the Sweden Democrats, of course, that wants to set the standard for who is a Swede and who is not a Swede. So in that way, they have gone from a neo-Nazi, openly racist party to more sort of cultural homogeneous. We will want to get back to Sweden as it was in the 1960s when it was full employment and only white people on the streets or something like that. Well, and because also, because of the European Union, I can say here, the labor market has changed. As I mentioned, then French truck drivers that are out-competed by Polish truck drivers. We have the same problem in Sweden with truck drivers that cannot compete in salaries with Polish truck drivers. But we also have, like at construction sites, at the construction sites there might be one main operator, a Swedish company, but they hire subcontractors that hire subcontractors that hire subcontractors. And in the end, there are Czech construction workers working as independents, own entrepreneurs in their contracts, doing work, ordinary construction work, as a carpenter or working with windows at this site. So they import work, cheap labor from Czech Republic and Poland, for example, to Sweden. And, of course, that creates tension for Swedish construction workers. Let's see. I think I have summarized a little bit. There are a little bit more to say about, like in Finland, there is a party called the Finnish Party or the True Finns. They are also on the margin on if they are an extremist party or a more conservative party. Now they have also joined the conservative group in the European Parliament. But they are also anti-immigration. It's an alliance with people that give Nazi salute and people that once belonged to the Social Democratic Party as trade unionists but have seen their workplaces disappear, and they have then moved from trade union, social democratic leader, councilman in the town where they live to become councilman for the True Finns instead because they feel betrayed in the globalized society. So there are a lot to say about the history of the different political parties, and you can just ask if you want about the situation in a specific country, and I will try to answer that. But I just want to say that I'm not defeatist and negative about the future, but for the moment it looks very dark in Europe. The political elite, like Angela Merkel of the German Christian Democrats, the French socialist president Hollande, all this, they want to create some sort of new European state governed from Brussels with all its legislation, and they think it will be good for the people, it will give growth and so on. But they have tried now for more than 20 years, and nothing has happened. It has just gone from bad to worse for workers out there. And then they feel they really need to kick the ass of the establishment. They want to vote as drastic as possible And then they are not afraid of voting for neo-Nazi parties, unfortunately, in Europe today. Thank you.
Are the far right and the far left in Europe opposing TISA, for example, or the TTIP?
Yes, yes. Especially the left, and because there is a fear then in the future that American companies can go to court and because of lost properties, potential profits,
potential,
and so on.
That's even better. Yeah.
So there is a debate about that. And the new president of the European Commission, Luxembourg Christian Democrat, he has said that he is against this court procedure, at least. But I don't know. He's a politician. He can turn 180 degrees. But also, in the far right, of course, they say whatever they feel goes home among the working class. So for the moment, maybe the workers and the working class in the workers in Europe doesn't know that much about TTIP, because it's more has been a debate among those that follow the political debate. But in that way, I haven't seen the far right really active in this issue. It's more the left wing, the environment organizations, and social movements that has been active in TTIP so far against it.
There's an important fascist group in the Ukraine, Right Sector. Could you tell us about the Right Sector? I think it's in the government.
Yeah, Svoboda, you mean, the Svoboda Party.
Yeah.
About Ukraine then. In Ukraine, as you might know, in Western Ukraine they are Ukrainians, and in Eastern Ukraine they are Russians. And this party Svoboda is the Ukrainian nationalist party, looking back also to there were Ukrainian SS troops, for example. And this party Svoboda, they have been a part of the government. Well, they still is. There is a admiral actually from the Ukrainian fleet that has been Svoboda's representative in the Ukrainian government. For example, we have had volunteers from Sweden going fighting both for Ukraine and for the Russian side. Both of them, both groups have been Nazis. So there is both those Nazi groups, like Jobbik, for example, in Hungary, that have an admiration for Putin and Russia. And then there are some of the neo-Nazis that have an admiration for Svoboda. And there, because Svoboda has also had always connections with Front National in France, and with another National Democrats in Sweden, a party in between neo-Nazis and Sweden Democrats. So Svoboda has always been on the European stage together with these extreme right-wing parties. And now they are also in the middle of Ukraine politics.
So my question is sort of why do workers turn that way? Is it because solely because of conservative neoliberal policies, or is it also a consequence of the lack of a left alternative?
Well, anti-Islam movements, like in Germany now, there has been anti-Islam marches in Leipzig, and I don't know how many that took part now in the latest demonstration here, because I've been in Latin America, but I heard something about 17,000 2 weeks ago or something like that. And they have also previously had Stop Islam marches in Brussels. But, in Brussels, for example, it has turned quite violent. And when it comes to violence, not all of these far-right groups want to take a street fight. It's not their profile. So they have been divided then on how to work together when they are so... Some of them claims to be peaceful, and some of them are really obsessed with violence as a political method to get power. So there are... They try to form some stop Islam groups in Europe, but so far they haven't been successful because they are so different in their approach to how to fight their struggle. About why do workers vote at right-wing parties that goes against their interests in their life? Well, I was now in El Salvador, and there poor people also vote for the right-wing Arena Party that has a direct connection to the death squads during the Civil War, and also death squads that still are operative, but now they are more into killing gang members. And many poor people, well, they are, the media to 95% are with the right-wing parties, well, especially Arena, but poor people, they are not that well educated, they don't know much about politics, they are easy manipulated, and they are, it's hard to reach through to them about, well, you must think about the long-term perspective of your life and your family's life to get, how to say, emancipated or so, getting a better standard of living, getting a better standard of education for your children and so on. But not that many get that perspective in their life because of lack of education and so on. Well, you also have a problem here like white working class voting for the Republican Party, or like how, at least in Obama's first president election, the Republicans hoped to win Michigan, and the white working class vote there and get Michigan Republican in that president election. They failed. We see that all over, especially like in Sweden nowadays. I told that to Bill before. In the 1980s, we only had two TV channels. People always watched the TV news because there was nothing else to see. So they were more informed about what happened in the political life. Now, when they have internet and we have 50 TV channels at least to choose in between, people do not follow political events anymore. It has become a more an elite and intellectual business to follow the political debate. And that, of course, it's the working class that doesn't take part in the political debate. They don't belong to the chattering classes.
But what are the economic ties behind some of these fascist parties in Europe?
I don't think any of these fascist parties have got any ties to the financial sector. Like in Britain now, when UKIP is big, they get some millionaires, some philanthropists to donate money to UKIP. But still, the business sector, they are with the Tory party, and to some extent with the Labour party actually nowadays as well. Front National and Sweden Democrats, for years they have been able to barely survive. Front National has been really close to bankruptcy for several years. Now they have 23 or 24 members of the European Parliament, which give them secretariat allowance and so on to employ people. But they have had really problems, financial problems. And Sweden Democrats, they have been both taxing their members and get money from local councils as a party support system gives them. And then they have been able to develop their... So far, we haven't seen that business sector have backed up any of these fascist parties, with some reservation maybe in, like, Ataka in Bulgaria might have some businessmen supporting them, but it's not. I mean, thinking about the different political parties here, well, maybe like in Denmark, yes, because the Danish People's Party supported the right-wing government for 10 years or something like that. So they even if they have a solid support in the working class voters, I'm sure that they have some businessmen, individuals that give them money.
What about Hungary?
Now the right-wing party Fidesz, they have majority, their own majority in the Hungarian parliament. So it's a politics is business. It's buy and sell in election campaigns and so on. And the Hungarian Socialist Party is the same. Their party leader is a former youth communist leader that turned into a businessman and is really wealthy. So the Socialist Party now is divided, but they haven't been better in government. Now I think in Hungary, Jobbik, they get the little money they can get from their 20% base of voters actually.
About subcontractors and subcontractors and so on is very common in Japan. There's no protection for the workers at all.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. Like in Sweden, at a construction site in Stockholm, I think it was 3 foreign workers that were killed in an accident. It was just sloppy procedure with the workers' protection there. Yeah. And they were just foreigners, so the Swedish parliament doesn't seem to care. Yeah.
Could you say a little bit more about the class dynamics? The reason to talk, you would know better than I, that if Syriza does win, that they will withdraw from the EU and tell Germany to take their debts and shovel.
First about the Nazi Party. Like in the Weimar Republic, unemployed people tended to support either the Communists or the Nazi Party. And people that had jobs that were unionized, they supported the Social Democratic Party. So, and at the same time as Hitler got money from the big finance in Weimar Republic, he also had his SA troops that consisted of unemployed people. So he did both. And that is also in connection to what we spoke about here about you have workers now that are not unionized or that, well, they might be unionized paying their membership fee, but they are not the strong voice within the trade union. And that you have in Sweden a class division among workers, Swedish workers that have that are artisans or are well connected, and you have a lower class of workers. Some are just Czechs or Polish people working there temporary, and they have no rights at all. Or poor immigrants, as we have had in Sweden, doing cleaning jobs and so on, and they don't know their right to become a member of the of a union or so. So we see that division. About Greece and Syriza, Syriza have said that they don't want Greece to leave the European Union. And about if they should leave the euro, it has been different statements over time. I don't know if they will really be so rebellious if they get the political power. I think it will be new turns of negotiations between the other euro countries and Greece about how to solve the Greek problem and if there will be better conditions for Greece in paying off their future debts and so. I already 10 years ago, some people said, EU will not exist in 5 years or so. But still, it has been able to, with all the political power of the establishment from the big countries, they have been able to keep it together. And there has been different discussions about maybe that Germany should go back to Deutschmark so they could form an A and B team in the Eurozone instead. So Greece and Spain and so on could stay in the Euro. So there has been different scenarios for should Greece and Spain leave or should Germany leave or should they just let it all fall apart and so on. But so far they have really been able to keep it together. But I don't know about the future. Well, in Sweden, we have always been in favor of free trade, but the rule has also been like that in Sweden, all workers should be treated equal. So if a Polish worker works in Sweden, he should get the what is agreed in Swedish trade union agreements. So, if we lose our steel industry because there are other workers that are better, more efficient, cheaper, then we have to develop something else. That has been the Swedish way of thinking on the global market. But
explain the difference between fascism and Nazism.
Well, like if we take Jobbik as an example, as a Nazi party, they believe in big government for Hungary, but only for ethnic Hungarians, not for Roma, a Romanian minority or things like that. Yeah, exactly. The fascism has not been racist in that way, they have been into violence as well. But the Nazis are more into pure race than the fascists. The fascist has been seen. I'll just see here if I have it. The fascists, they want a strong state. and they want a unit that is governed by a leader. But the Nazis, they are much more into races. That's the big difference, okay. So to say. Well, I think.
Could you repeat the question? So
yeah. The rise, the Euro crisis. How much has that? Caused the rise of the far right? Yeah. Well, like in Greece, the Golden Dawn, the neo-Nazi party, wouldn't have grown up if it hadn't been this Euro crisis. The Golden Dawn, for example, they have gone out in the street and have had soup kitchens, but only for pure Greeks, of course. So they have been able to collect young workless men in groups that stays in a party headquarter, fixed with weapons and so on. And all this situation has been created by the Euro crisis. In Greece, that is very clear. But yeah, also in other countries, like in Sweden, we had a referendum about the euro and voted no. But the political establishment wanted a yes. And of course, people remember that the Sweden Democrats, they are their friends when it comes to the euro, because they were against it and they had right, well, just as the Left Party and the Green Party. But still, so they can also harvest the victory of the no side in Sweden, the far right, because they were against the euro and this stupid project. So in many countries, yes, the far right has really, the euro has been one of the main factors for their growth.
Because they're against keeping it?
Yeah, well, because the euro has created this crisis in Spain, in Greece, and in Southern Europe. Yeah, I think it's too loose. Like UKIP, the UK Independence Party, are called fascist. As I said, I don't think they are fascist. They are ethnocentric, and a lot of bad words can be said about them. But to call them racist or fascist, that is the wrong term for them. The same thing, sometimes they put in some Polish right-wing parties as anti-Semitic, or that they are within the far-right fold. And I don't think they are. They are very strong Catholic, conservative, family value, anti-gay parties, but they are not fascist or Nazi or anything like that. But like in the Polish right, they have the problem, like they, some of them like Le Pen a lot, even if he spread Nazi literature in the 1950s. But they have problems to join forces with the Freiheitlichen in Austria and NPD in Germany, because the Poles, in one way, some of them are anti-Semitic, but they, of course, hate the atrocities that Nazi Germany committed in Poland during World War II. So they are a little bit divided on which one should they cooperate with in Western Europe.
My question is, what is going on with the human behavior?
Well, for example, Jobbik in Hungary, they want to create the society of all dreams for ethnic Hungarians. And then they want the Romas to live somewhere else and have their society of dreams and hopes. So they think, I want to give something good to the world. And sometimes when the human being believes in a vision that this is good for us, then the human being can be very cruel. That we have seen also during Russian Revolution or the Chinese Revolution, like Lenin said something about, Mao said, I think, if you want to make an omelette, you have to crack eggs. So sometimes the human being can be very cruel when we think we want to create something very good. That we have seen in history.
But this is kind of a religious way of dealing with things.
Resistance, there is resistance. Mm. You're a part of it.
No, well, we have youth movements that are very radical and takes the debate with the Nazis and the fascists. We have intellectuals that write very good articles at the cultural columns in the newspapers and so on. But how do we reach out, for example, to the white working class that just want to look at detective stories at TV and doesn't want to read any books or read a political article or anything like that. How do we reach out to them?
About in the popular media?
Well, I think it is, like in Sweden, we have a debate in the media about the Sweden Democrats, all the things they do and say. For example, some of their MPs even picked up iron bars when they were out drinking themselves silly in the inner city of Stockholm in order to take a fight with an immigrant gang. One of the MPs had to resign then because they believed in the parliament of the street. But so they have been exposed for doing very stupid things in Sweden. But still, you have, well, in Sweden we today we have some in the working class that are so anti everything. So they say, I know a friend of my father said, "Oh, yeah, that was good. Yeah, give them a real kicking, those immigrants." And he comes from a poor working class, agriculture working family.
Capitalism globalized. The culture of it is globalized. And the crises that are afflicting everybody are globalized as well. So where do people turn?
Well, like in Greece, we have Syriza. We have a counterweight in Greece. In Sweden, we have also the left and the greens and so on. So there are counter movements as well. It's just that sometimes it feels like those that argues according to prejudice, according to intolerance, that they win at least some battles. It's not always they win the war, but still they win battles with their easy rhetorics. Yeah, the most of them have also anti-woman platform, especially in Eastern Europe. In PVV, in Netherlands, it's different because Geert Wilders, the one-man party in Netherlands, he says that he is anti-Muslim because he claims that the Muslims will come and they will jeopardize the gay rights that they have in the Netherlands. It will jeopardize the rights for the women that they have in the Netherlands and so on. So there are some far-right parties, anti-Muslim parties, that claims that they are very much a women's liberation movement and a gay liberation movement, but they are few. The most of them, especially in Eastern Europe, they are very into family values and conservative on these issues.
I wanted to ask you, when you get back to this whole thing about people who had come to Sweden as immigrants, and now have considered themselves Swedish, joining the Swedish Democrats. Mm. I mean, is that a phenomenon you see in other European right-wing parties, that people have been assimilated to some extent? Like the Front National, do they have, like, second generation or third generation African members?
Yeah, for example, in Front National, they a couple of years ago I read an article of a black member of Front National from Martinique, and he claimed his family has been French for at least 4 or 5 generations or so. There is also in France many active in Front National with Polish family names. Their families came from Poland to work in the steelworks in beginning of the 1920s or something like that. And they say, "We are assimilated French today." But the Muslims, that's something totally different. But they, of course, they are French because France is also a cultural commonship, because France is built on Catalans, Basques, Flemish-speaking people, German-speaking people, and so on. So the French Republic is built on different groups that have assimilated into the French cultural nation.
What is your definition of fascism?
Well, I think, old fascism, that is Benito Mussolini and his way.
But that's Yeah. That's something you really consider fascism.
Yeah. New fascism, neo-fascism, that is like the Sweden Democrats. They are not Nazi, but they have a vision of, they are very intolerant, they are more or less, they are closet racists, but they cannot be called Nazis. They also want a social legislation for Swedish workers, but kick out the foreign workers. Let us say that there are three groups. That are those like Danish People's Party, True Finns, and some other parties that are more right-wing populists. And then there are those in the middle, like the Sweden Democrats, that are closet racists, closet Nazis. But you cannot call them Nazis in the way that they don't wear uniforms, they don't parade. But then we have the pure Nazis like Jobbik and Golden Dawn in Greece.
But then Jobbik and Golden Dawn, they're not fascists.
No, they are pure Nazi, trying to form a real Greek and Hungarian, respectively, social state of ethnic Hungarians and or Greeks.
And you call them fascists?
I call them Nazis, the Greeks and the Hungarians.
So this is what's called fascists.
Yeah. The fascists are those in between, with Jobbik and Golden Dawn on this side, and with the Danish People's Party and True Finns that are on the verge to the Conservative Party on the other side. The neo-fascists, they are in the middle here. And they are also different, like Lega Nord is different in their profile according to their tradition from their country. The Sweden Democrats are different because there is another political history and tradition in Sweden since World War II and so on. So they are not totally equalized in between them because they also built on their own national traditions and history. So and values according to that.
So what about Russia?
Yeah, like in Russia, we have Zhirinovsky and his Liberal Democrats, for example, that was very big a couple of years ago. They were right-wing populists. They worked together with the Russian Nazis. For example, when Yeltsin dissolved by force the Russian Duma in 1993, I think it was, Russian Nazis went in to help the Duma members against the Russian police and so on. So Russia has also got a Nazi movement that wants to create a pure Russian state. But they are a small group, of course. But then we have this, like, Zhirinovsky that says whatever is possible in order to get votes from the Russian voters. And then we have Putin that is an authoritarian person. He wants the power and he wants to keep it. Well, of course he wants to give wealth to his people, but of course at the same time he wants to give money to the new rich class, the new nomenclatura that he belongs to.
And Clinton.
Yeah.
Okay, we only have time for a few more questions. Yeah.
So the general characteristics of fascism are, is it nationalistic? Is it
corporatist?
Intolerant of diversity, maybe?
Yeah.
I guess they're not all racist, but what are the other characteristics of
Yeah, well, yeah, corporate, they don't speak that much of today, of course, but let's see here. No, but...
When you say people aren't fascists, does that mean... I just want to know what the basic... As a non-historian, what are the basic characteristics of fascism?
For example, in neo-fascism, like the Sweden Democrats say, we should not take political refugees to Sweden. Instead, we should help them in their camps in Turkey or some other place in their region, just outside the country that they have fled from.
Of your own type.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep up walls for your own state, create your own cultural hegemony, or in some cases they want to keep it pure racist.
And conservative.
Yeah. Conservative, social conservative. Provincialist, narrow-minded, they don't know much about the world around them. They have a vision of, we are better than those people. That's also rhetoric. Like Jean-Marie Le Pen, he said, I like more my relatives than I like my friends. I like more my friends than I like my neighbors. I like more my neighbors than those I don't know because I don't give a
not
about. Yeah.
Very narrow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's also typical fascism for Spain. Franco, he was not a member of the Falangist Party at the beginning, but he, of course, in the former dictatorship in Spain we call a fascist dictatorship. But Franco, he was a staunch Catholic. He was very social conservative. He didn't give a damn about poor people. He followed the Catholic Church. Just waving the flag and following the
monarchist,
a monarchist, he was supporting the Catholic Church and their suppression of Spain and of people's democratic rights and so on. So Spain had a certain type of fascism. It has been called fascism also, but it was not at all about social legislation or anything like that, that Benito Mussolini anyway believed on for Italians. In Spain, it was another type of fascism where they didn't care about poor people.
Clerical fascism, yeah, brings in the religion. In a way, Mussolini, who was an atheist, didn't. Mm. Are there anybody didn't speak? If not, we can stay around for a little bit and talk to Jan, but I'd like to end the meeting formally and thank him very much.
Thank you.